So, Sierra,
Yes.
have you thought of taking all of the slides and putting it into like a bound copy and like a braille copy and anything like that?
I have not thought of that, but I can. Why? What were
I
your
mean,
thoughts?
well, I was thinking that it's a very good tool. To have at centers, a very good tool to have at April. We would be happy to bind them if you would like.
I'd have to take yes is my answer. And I'll have more questions about what that needs to look like to make sure, because I know once we start brailing, it looks quite different.
And a lot larger.
So yes. And I would be willing to share ideas with you on whatever you had.
Okay. I think that would be great. I don't know. Dylan, what do you think?
I think that yes, that's a great resource to have. If Don, if you're willing to do the effort of putting it together, I think definitely better to have it than not have it.
Right. Yeah. I don't want it just to go by the wayside.
Yeah, well, we wanted to put it because we've put some of our other webinars on there, the ADA one we did last year, and then this one to go on our website for people to reference later on. So I do want to do that. I want to do it in a little bit more of a usable format than it's on there right now, but I like that idea.
Yeah, anything I can do.
I was like,
Absolutely.
I hear a whistle.
Oh, that's me. Sorry.
I saw it now.
It's funny.
Good catch, Joanna. I will send that out.
I didn't notice that.
Which is interesting because I had to play with it, so evidently just rejected my attachment. I'll resend it out now. We'll get started in about 3 minutes. I'm getting ready to email back out the right PowerPoint because it didn't link me yesterday. So it's not attached, the one for today. So I'm sending that out right now. So if you have the bit availability to get on your email, it will be there. We're going to get started in about 2 minutes. Hopefully, you're here for the Fair Housing Act training part four. So, we're almost through it. We're going to get started in about probably 2 minutes. Joanna, just to clarify, you want to be muted or you don't want to be muted so you can join in? Oh, no, you're fine. You're good. Thank you for checking, though. Well, we're going to go ahead and get started. It's the top of the hour. So good afternoon, everybody. I'm Sierra Royster. I'm April's Youth Program Coordinator. I want to thank everyone for joining us again today. This is the April Youth Advocacy Committee's training, part four for Fair Housing Act. Today we're going to be talking about trouble in paradise, managing those landlord-tenant conflicts. We hope this training you're taking a lot of away and able to either learn for yourselves or be able to apply it to your youth programming that you're already working within. We do want to just give a shout out and thank you to the Research and Training Center on Independent Living at the University of Kansas. So thank them for supporting us, which support youth. They've been a long time supporter of what we do. Today's call is run off of a webinar platform. You can follow along with the PowerPoint materials that I just sent to you. So the ones you got yesterday, somebody reminded me that it was part three again. So I apologize for that. But you should have part four sitting in your email now. And can follow along at home if you'd like, or along with the phone if you want to call in. Please know that you can participate online. If you're able to, you can mute and unmute. If you take your mouse to the bottom of the screen and scroll over there, you'll see a microphone pop up at the bottom left hand. You can press star 6 or star 9 if you're on a phone as well. So everybody is muted right now. We'll open up the lines in just a minute. You'll stay muted until you decide to join in, and then you'll can unmute yourself or either raise your hand. So today's call is going to be, or webinar will be recorded, and there's CART available as well. So if you would like to follow along on a bigger screen for CART, you can do so by following the stream text link that was sent in the email. And I'll also drop it into the chat as well, so you can follow that if you need it. If you do run into any technical issues today, please contact me. I'm going to drop my email into the chat box as well, so you can have that if you need it. The audio recording and the transcript will be sent to you afterwards. But know that all of that will be put online at the end of the whole entire training. So I think I've covered all the housekeeping items. Thank you all for joining us. I'm going to go ahead and turn it on over to Don and Dylan for week 4.
All right. Thank you, Sierra. Present, not share. There we go. All right. Well, welcome everyone. Week 4 of our training series. Thanks for everyone for coming back week after week. Today we're going to be talking about some of the more exciting aspects of the landlord-tenant relationship, which can happen when there is conflict. And we're going to talk about lots of different areas of conflict that can crop up. And like we said in our first couple, we've emphasized this, I think, a lot over our training series, the relationship with your landlord is an important one. And a lot of your experience with your house, with your apartment, is going to depend on your relationship with your landlord. And if it's good to have a healthy, friendly relationship with your landlord as much as possible, simply because that will, if your landlord thinks you're a good tenant, if your landlord likes you, they're more likely to come over and help you. If there's a problem, they're more likely to respond quickly if you have an issue. And it's just, it's a beneficial relationship to have. But sometimes you do run into problems. There can be several different areas that those problems crop up in. There can be some simple maintenance problems, issues with the apartment or some of the systems that run in the apartment. Or there's the interpersonal problems, some of the conflict. Maybe you and your landlord don't get along. Maybe there have been some grievances on either side. The landlord has made a couple of mistakes. The tenant has made some mistakes, and that can cause some arguments. And then there is housing discrimination, right? And the difference between an interpersonal conflict and housing discrimination is the basis of that conflict. If the conflict is coming because the tenant is a member of one of those protected classes that we talked about that's covered under the Fair Housing Law, the national origin, race, sex, disability, familial status. What am I missing? Source of income, that's not everywhere. But yes, those protected classes that are covered under the Fair Housing Act, if someone is being mistreated because of that, that's covered under housing discrimination. And we're going to talk about all three of those different areas of conflict and how to manage and go about resolving that conflict. And so first, we're going to turn it over to Don to talk about maintenance issues.
Thank you, Dylan, and welcome everybody. So how do you fix a maintenance problem? Everybody has a maintenance problem, of course, So the first thing is always having documentation. So you need to send your landlord a letter that states a few different things. The first thing would be, what is the problem? So for example, your water won't get hot. That would be the problem that the landlord would need to know. Otherwise, you're not stating the issue. Number two, what is your proposed solution? And an example would be, I want you to hire, you being the landlord, to hire a plumber to fix the water heater. It doesn't mean they will, but that is one solution. At least you're coming with a solution, not just a problem. And a landlord appreciates that. Three, what do you expect, or when do you expect it to be taken care of? So for example, since hot water is a habitability issue, I expect it to be taken, that the problem to be resolved in 3 days. And 3 days is a long time when you don't have hot water. So within 3 days is what I would say, resolved within 3 days. Get a plumber there and have hot water within 3 days. That's very, very reasonable. Number four, what mediation plan you will use if the landlord doesn't fix the issue? Example, if the problem is not resolved in 3 days, they'll consider the lease terminated and look for a new housing situation. And there again, you are going step by step and laying out possibly for, in case this ends up being taken to court too. So it ends up being that you are not just evicted without having any deposit given back or having any mark against if you have Section 8 or HUD, because you are trying to find solutions to the problem. And number five is really, really a big one, I think. You have to give your landlord permission to come into the apartment without 24-hour notice. Usually it's 24 hours notice, but it's a situation where you're asking for, say, a hot water heater to be fixed. You will sign something waiving the landlord's responsibility to provide that 24-hour notice of entry and give them and all repair staff permission to enter the apartment to resolve the problem. That is how that can get done within the time frame that you're actually asking for it to be done. So, and you must give this to your landlord through the official communication system described in your lease. And there again, that is very important. Look at your lease, see how all of this has to be done, whether it's through email, writing, a letter. Do they say a text is okay? However it says that it has to be done, then it has to be done that way. You follow the lease and you follow how it says, then you're not going outside the bounds of your lease to do that.
Absolutely, right. This letter is incredibly important because it outlines what the next week, 2 weeks are going to look like. It says what you expect of the landlord and what you will do if the landlord does not follow through, which is really important. So once you send this letter to your landlord, they have two options. The first one is to fix the problem. And this is the easiest option for everyone, is to take whatever solution you propose in your letter, or if they decide they don't want to hire a plumber, maybe they can come in and fix the hot water heater themselves. Either way, as long as the problem is resolved. Or if they don't resolve the problem, they can send you a rejection letter. They can say, you know, I thought about it. I don't want to have to fix this problem. So no, I'm not going to do it. And this terminates your lease and gives you 30 days to leave the property. This isn't a very common scenario and probably would only happen if there was a significant issue that would take a lot of time for the landlord to resolve, that they wouldn't want a tenant in the house while they were fixing it. This is not very common. What's most common is the landlord will fix it, or if they don't, they just won't respond, right? So what if your landlord doesn't respond in the given time frame? You said, I want you to fix the problem within 3 days. 3 days passes and you have no response from your landlord. Now, as the tenant, you have two options. You get to decide what you want to do. The first option is you can decide, okay, the landlord hasn't fixed the problem. They haven't responded to me. I don't have hot water. I want to live in a house that has hot water. So I'm going to terminate this lease and take up to 30 days to find a new apartment. That could be one option. That's kind of a tough undertaking. Finding a new house in 30 days and having to organize a move puts a lot of pressure on, but that is an option that you can choose. A second option would be to do what's called repair and deduct, where you as the tenant would hire your own plumber. You would go and find someone, call them and have them come in and fix the problem, and you pay them. And then you take whatever you paid that plumber and deduct it from the next month's rent. So if you paid the plumber $200 to fix your water heater, then you would give the receipt along with next month's rent and say, okay, I'm taking $200 off of this rent because you didn't fix this problem. I had to do it. But you can only do this, if you listed repair and deduct as the proposed mediation plan in that letter to your landlord, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to say, if you don't fix this problem within 3 days, I'm going to hire a plumber and fix it myself, and I'll deduct it from my rent. So that's the only time that you can do this is if you put that in the letter, if you send the letter to your landlord and your landlord doesn't respond to you. That's the only time that you can do this. So don't just go willy-nilly thinking you can get money off your rent. That's not going to happen. It has to be very, very well documented. And if you do hire someone to fix the problem, you have to keep detailed receipts. Right. So over on this slide, we have a picture of an itemized service invoice. This is just a sample invoice, doesn't list a specific company, but it lists out each of the tasks that they did, right? It says consultation, design, the hours that they spent doing it, and how much they charged you per hour, right? So that for all of the money that you spent, you can say exactly where every penny went, and that's why you're deducting it from your rent. You have to have that receipt, otherwise the landlord can come back and say that you spent too much money or that you were trying to extort them or something. So how long does the landlord have to fix a problem? We mentioned hot water is a habitability issue. That's something you may have remember from, I think, week two. For things that involve hot water, electricity, heating, and the plumbing, those four issues are all considered to be habitability. If there's an issue with any of those systems, the landlord has to fix that within 3 business days. For any other issue, as long as it's covered in the lease, the landlord has 10 days. If it's not a habitability issue and it's not specifically covered in the lease, then it's not the landlord's responsibility. I'm trying to think of an example of something like that that would happen.
Dylan, can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
To go back to that receipt piece, so I know a lot of places will make you, I don't remember the word, like where you get quotes from 3 different companies to make sure that you found the lowest. Do you have to show those as part of that, or is that dependent on?
I don't believe so. I believe that as long as if the landlord didn't respond and you're taking care of this on your own, then it's sort of at your discretion to hire who you are. What would you say, Don?
Yeah, it's not like you've had a discussion with the landlord and he says, go ahead and do it on your own and just get like 3 bids and whatever is the lowest, do it. I mean, that would be different.
Okay. And then my next question is, what if somebody can fix it themselves?
That's tricky. If you really, really trust in yourself and your skills, then maybe, but the issue is liability there. Like if you hire a plumber and the plumber does something that wrecks the water heater and you have to buy a new water heater, the plumber has insurance and that will pay for it. If you end up doing something that causes a problem to the water heater, then you would be responsible for buying a new one. So it depends on, like I said, how much you trust your skills and your ability to take care of a situation.
Yeah, I was also thinking, could you, so yes, the liability portion of that, but if I'm working on a hot water heater and I have to get a replacement part, could I deduct that part price? Can I lay that out as part of the deduction piece?
I know don't
I'm asking so. Harder questions.
The only way you would be able to do that is if you sent the letter to your landlord saying that if you don't respond, I'm going to fix it myself and charge you for any materials I purchase. And if you tell your landlord you're doing that and you don't have the credentials to do that, then that's probably going to be a problem.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Great questions. Yeah, so for an issue that isn't specifically listed in the lease, the landlord doesn't have to solve it. Like if, I don't know, if something happens to the rose bush that's in your front yard, and usually the landlord takes care of the bush and trims it and waters it and makes sure it stays nice, but like something happens and it gets uprooted and the bush is no longer there. The landlord is not required to replace that rose bush because it's probably not specifically listed in the lease. Can you think of any other scenarios that would fit that, Don? Because that's what I feel like. I saw a bush out my window. That's what I'm going off of.
It was good. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And if it's not covered under habitability and it's not in the lease, legally, nobody's responsibility.
Stevie asked about leaks. I think that's what she asked.
Leaks. What about leaks? Do they have 10 days? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Does the 10 days apply to leaks?
So like if your roof is leaking, so that would falls under here when we're talking about habitability, maintaining the structural components and a weather protected unit. That's a habitability issue. If water is getting inside, it's not protecting you from the weather, and the landlord would have 3 days to fix that problem.
Okay, so there's a 3 day and there's a 10 day depending on what the issue is.
Yeah, so the habitability issues, things that affect your ability to safely live in the apartment, things like electricity, if the windows are broken, if it's not weatherproof or it's leaking, if the electricity isn't working, those are things that have to be solved quickly because it's unsafe to live in an apartment that's leaky or is cold. But if you just have a light that is out, or I don't know, if there's a hole in the wall, that would be a 10-day problem to fix because it's not an immediate cause for concern.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Yes, absolutely. And if a landlord's going to fix the problem, remember, it has to be due to normal wear and tear or because of an accident. It can't be because of intentional damage. I've got a picture on this slide of what appears to be a truck or a large SUV sticking out of the roof of a house. So I'm not quite sure how that happened, but let's hope that was an accident, not intentional damage.
I have another question.
Yes.
Okay, I use a wheelchair inside my apartment, and the doors are pretty wide enough. They're a little narrow, but it was built in an older time, so they're wider than the newer ones. But I still have a little bit of dings, like, on the side of the door. So would that be considered normal wear and tear since using a wheelchair is part of what I need to do sometimes because of my condition under accommodations? I don't know. I'm trying to ask a question.
No, that's a very good question. It's a very important question. I would argue yes. I can also see a scenario where a landlord would argue that you would be responsible for paying that. It's not necessarily clear in the law. I don't think that it says that wear and tear due to a wheelchair or due to a technology system that's used for an accommodation. I don't know if that's specifically covered, but I think you could definitely make a case for yourself.
Okay, thank you.
I would definitely say that if I was going to argue, if the landlord said no, that it was not normal wear and tear, I would say you do not have an accessible apartment. So this is what happens. So, you know.
If you had an accessible entry that didn't have this, that was wider, or that didn't have this, one of the door that my partner comes in and out has this weather stripping that they have completely ripped off because their feet drag when they come in and out, right? And that, to me, is just normal wear and tear because that's just what happens when they walk in and out of the door. That's pretty unavoidable.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not explicitly covered, but I think most likely you would be able to convince the landlord to cover it.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so Don, would you like to move on to talk about eviction?
Yeah, so eviction. Now, eviction is the act of expelling a tenant from a property. And, you know, like I get a lot of people in here that have their landlords saying that they are evicting them. And, you know, it's a scary time for them. And a lot of people don't understand what that all means. And it's a process. It's not where they're going to be just thrown out tomorrow. So one of the things that can cause you to get evicted is not paying your rent on time. A lot of landlords will let you, you know, lapse for a month or two, sometimes three. But if you get where you're not paying, you know, and you're at that, like, especially the third month, it shouldn't be a surprise if you get an eviction notice from your landlord.
And the laws are different in every state. Some states, a landlord can go and seek an eviction order if you are only 1 month late. In some states, it is the law that they have to wait 2 or 3 months before they do that.
Dylan, you just answered my question.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it just depends on the landlord themselves because they want to turn over and they don't want somebody who's going to be late constantly too. If you stay after your lease ends, well, this picture that shows a destroyed, I guess it's an apartment house, maybe. But if you stay after your lease ends, if you have not been a good tenant, they're going to evict you and fast. They're not going to let you stay. If your rent payments are not going through, if you have checks that are bouncing, this is a sign to the landlord that you don't have enough income coming in or enough money in your bank to keep up payments for your rent. So they will start talking of eviction then also. One of the things that happens a lot is renting an apartment to someone else without the permission from the landlord. So like subletting, subleasing, it's done a lot. Sometimes, you know, it's done with the permission of the landlord, and you can ask the landlord and they will let you do it. If especially if you have part of a lease left, you can do that. But if you don't ask the landlord and you do this, you'll be in a lot of trouble, actually. So, Dylan, what do you know about subletting, subleasing?
My first introduction to subleasing was when I was in college, and it was a pretty common practice for someone was going to study abroad for a few months and wanted to have someone stay in their apartment and pay their rent while they're away so that they don't have to pay rent twice, or someone who sublet their apartment for the summer while they're out of town. It does happen, and like you say, Dawn, if you have the landlord's permission, it doesn't have to be an issue. But if you don't tell your landlord, or if you have a two-bedroom apartment and you're renting out one of the bedrooms and you don't tell your landlord, that can be an issue.
And this is Sierra. Does that counts for even if it's family, right? Like, oh, well, my brother said he was going to stay with me and he's giving me some cash on the side.
So if you have the lease agreement drawn up where he's paying you $500 or $100 every month or whatever, then that's a problem. If you have just decided to let him stay with you and he is gifting you some money in return, then he is just a guest, and then you can refer to whatever the policy for guests it would be on your lease.
Right. And you know, a lot of housing programs have different laws on how long a guest can stay.
Yeah. And most leases, if they do have policies on guests, they say if someone's staying for more than 2 weeks, then that person's not a guest, they're a tenant, and you would have to apply for them to be on the lease if possible, or a lot of times that would not be possible, and the landlord is saying, we don't want anyone else staying with you more than 2 weeks.
Right.
Can we back up and let me ask about a rent question?
Yeah.
What if an apartment complex is going totally paperless, and you're signing up for whatever electronic thing that they're having you sign up for to pay your rent to have it drafted? Let's say it's somebody's first time and it doesn't go through. Can that person get charged a late fee? And how can you fix that problem if it becomes a problem? I'm trying to be proactive in case this comes about.
Okay, so let me see if I understand what's going on. So an apartment is switching from paper billing to online billing, and you're not going to be sending checks anymore. They're going to automatically take money out of your bank account. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you're just concerned that if it doesn't work the first time, then they'll charge you a late fee.
Or can the landlord charge a tenant a late fee if it's for anybody, because it seems like that's just the wave of technology that a lot of apartment complexes are going.
Yeah, technically, yes, if the rent is late, they could charge a late fee. However, one would hope that if they're in this exchange period, that they would hopefully be a little more forgiving. And right. If you're concerned about it, then maybe talk to your landlord in advance and just say, hey, I'm concerned that this might be an issue. Just want to make sure if it is an issue, there won't be any extra fees assessed because I only have so much money, you know.
Just to get clarification, because like I said, it just seems like that's to be the wave, and a lot of consumers may be having that question.
So Stevie, I know one like big apartment complex that did that recently, and so their concern for the tenants was exactly that. And so they gave a grace period of 2 months. So when people were switching, there wouldn't be any fees. And, you know, I think that's a good way to go, because it does take banks time to get all of that switched over beside, you know, the people and the apartments. So it's not just, you know, the tenants and the landlords, it's the banks also. And I think that's something to have, like if there's a tenants association or anything, talk to the landlord about, that there should be a grace period.
Okay. Thank you so much, Don.
Yep.
And Dylan, for your input as well.
So, let's see. Allowing waste on the property is also a very bad thing. If you see the picture here, it's a picture of bags and boxes of trash that actually make up a whole front yard in front of a house, which makes the habitability of the residents untenable, really, for not only them, but their neighbors. So that would cause eviction to happen, I think, very quickly. If, I mean, even before that, I mean, I would think a landlord would be doing something about that.
This is probably a picture of a house that is owned by someone, but yes, if you've got garbage piling in your backyard, or if you collect junk furniture that you find on the side of the road, or have four broken down cars, right, that could be a problem, and your landlord might approach you about that.
Let's see. So, unlawful business activity in your apartment or house will also get you evicted. Of course, I see this woman on the phone, and I had a different unlawful business activity in mind than what it shows computer and graphs and charts. But people do a lot of unlawful activity in their apartments. And if a landlord finds out, they will not tolerate that on their property, because that is their property. That's what they own. You are being disrespectful to them. And, you know, it's illegal. So yeah, they will evict you. You'll probably be, you'll have the cops called on you. So.
Yes. And so that goes for if you are activities that are illegal in your house, but it would also go for if you are running a business out of your house and you have not told your landlord this. Because if you are renting a space to use residentially, to use for a house, and you are running a business out of it that you don't have a license for, and that you aren't paying taxes for, then that could also be, like if you decide to start a cupcake shop out of your house, and you start selling, baking cupcakes in your house and selling them to people, you don't have a license to do that, and that can get you evicted from your house.
Yes.
Why does it always do this? It'll do it twice. There we go, this is it.
And then causing a nuisance to the other tenants. The other tenants are allowed to have their privacy and their quiet. And it will say in the lease about quiet time normally. If you are partiers that just want to party all the time, that's not going to work in most places. And that will get you on the bad side of a landlord, could get you evicted also. So yeah.
It's probably not going to get you evicted the first time, but if it happens 3 or 4 or 5 times, then that can be cause for eviction.
Especially if the cops are called. Yeah.
Oh, and I think it didn't show this picture that I have here. So even during eviction, you have rights as a tenant during this process. So if there is a problem and the landlord has decided they want to try to evict you, they have to give you 3 days notice to try to fix that problem before they go to a judge and seek an eviction order. And I think there was supposed to be a letter here on this page. Hopefully it got sent out to people in the document. And it's, I believe it says that there's a tenant who owes $2,500 in back rent. And the landlord is saying that you have 3 business days to pay this rent or I'm going to evict you. And so that would be a scenario. If you have money that you have not paid, they can give you a 3-day period to pay the rent or they will seek that eviction order.
And that is on your handouts. Oh, it came up now.
There it is.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Maybe this one. Okay. So if you don't fix the problem by the end of those 3 days, if you don't pay the rent or you don't get rid of the waste or fix whatever that problem is, then the landlord can go to a judge, say, hey, I gave them the letter. I said they had 3 days to fix the problem. They didn't fix the problem. So now I want to evict them. And pretty much guaranteed the judge will say, yep, you did what you were supposed to do. Here's your eviction order. But even on that eviction order, you don't have to leave immediately. You have 3 days from the posting of that eviction order to collect your belongings and find a place to go. So the landlord can't just show up with an eviction order and immediately ask you to leave. You have to have a grace period to get yourself and your belongings situated.
Although, Dylan, the one thing that I would say, at least around here, you know, with legal aid and stuff, what we have been able to do, and that's where people come in with the, you know, 3-day notice to quit, and they're like, I have to leave in 3 days, and they don't. I mean, they still have 30 days after that 3-day notice to quit. So because eviction is a process that they will still have to go through, and that's what we always go through with, you know, both Iowa Legal Aid and ourselves here, just so they know that yes, you have to get this done, you have to go through this, you know, and yes, you owe this, you have to do this, but don't think that you're going to be out on the street in 3 days. Usually they come to us like on the second or the third day, you know, of the 3 days. But anyway, yeah.
Okay. Well, this is good to know.
So do you have 3 days or 30 days? I got a little confused on that one.
We'll get like a 3-day notice to quit, and then they go to a judge, and then the judge usually gives them 30 days for the eviction. That's here. I don't want to speak for every.
Okay, so you have to look at your state.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, but it sounds like the 3 days for that eviction notice, it's the 3-day notice to have to go to court, and then once you're in court, if the judge decides to side with the landlord and evict you, then you would still have the 30 days after that to find a new place. Correct. Thank you for clarifying that, Don.
This is Sierra. I had one quick question about that. Could or would that information on how that is done be written in the lease that they could research, or is that a state policy?
You know, it really shouldn't be state by state. But I would just look up legal aid in whatever state you're in just to see.
Okay.
And I can send out what we have from Iowa Legal Aid just to let you know.
Great.
Write that down.
Great. Okay. Some other rights that you have during eviction. A landlord cannot evict you without that court order signed by a judge. So they can't come up and say, you didn't pay me the rent in 3 days like I asked, so now you have to get out. They have to have that court order signed by the judge. And even then, that would have to wait until the end of the 30-day period to come and force you out of the apartment. And the landlord cannot change the locks, shut off the electricity, shut off the water in order to force a landlord out of the apartment. In most states, that is illegal. Not every state, but the vast majority. And even at the end of that 30-day period, once the court order, the court after the 30-day court mandated period before the eviction, the landlord cannot show up on their own and remove you from the property. It can, only a police officer can order you to leave the property. And any personal property that's left inside of a residence you're evicted from has to be stored between 15 to 30 days, depending on the state law. And that's usually the at the expense of, I think that differs from state to state. Who would typically pay for that? I believe it was law enforcement. But what do you think, Don?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay, so any questions about eviction, rights during eviction, what landlords can and cannot do before we move on?
And just remember that the microphone is at the bottom of the computer screen. If you scroll over there, the microphone's on the left, and that unmutes you.
Okay, I think we'll move on then. So we wanted to talk a little bit about housing discrimination, which is specifically when people are prevented from accessing housing based on their race, national origin, gender, disability, religion, sex, and familial status. There, I think I got all seven that time. And this, on the screen, we have a picture of a sign from Detroit, Michigan in 1942. And that sign says, "We want white tenants in our white community," right? And so this was a period of our country, right, where we were, there was a case discussing what was called restrictive covenants, which came up after the Civil War when there were freed slaves, free Black people who were looking to find places to live and establish some homesteads. And white landowners who owned land for each other in neighborhoods and communities would come together and they would write what they called a restrictive covenant, saying that only people who met these conditions could live on that land or could purchase that land. And they could say, "We only want white people, we only want Christian people to live on this land." And up until the 1940s, these restrictive covenants would be upheld in the court, and people could say, "You know, I'm not going to sell you this house, I'm not going to let you live here because we don't want African Americans in our neighborhood." And that would legally be upheld until 1948, when the Supreme Court case Shelley v. Kramer decided that a court cannot uphold a restrictive covenant. So it was not illegal to have a restrictive covenant. It's not illegal to say, to make this decision, but it's not legally, you can't uphold it. You can't go to court and say, "We have this agreement, so we're not going to let people in here," because that's discrimination and the court is not allowed to discriminate. But even after that, we still saw some of the effects of that. And we still saw that different groups of people, different communities of people were being treated differently in their ability to find housing. And a term that we use to talk about that is redlining. And this refers to the same time period, the early 1900s, when banks were a lot more lenient. They were giving more money and more loans to people so that they could buy houses and use the money from selling those houses to build wealth. And a lot of poor and middle class people were able to grow their wealth and improve their status because of these bank lending policies. But the banks would take huge portions of the map and draw red lines around them and say, we're concerned about the demographics of the people in this area. We don't want to lend them money. We're not going to give them money because we don't know that we'll get that investment back. And most often, those areas that were blocked out were largely where Black people lived, Hispanic people, Indigenous people, and poor people of all races. So it really, it was, even though this discrimination was not supposed to be happening, it was still effectively happening because of how the banks decided to lend out the money. And these policies, right, the impact that this had on people, this is the reason that the Fair Housing Act was created in the first place, because because hundreds of thousands, millions of people were not allowed access to affordable housing, were not allowed access to housing that was safe because of who they were, because of their race or their gender. And that was a significant problem. So much of a problem that we decided we needed to pass a law to address that, right? And that's where these fair housing laws come from. But even with these laws, right, these laws exist because the problem still exists. In 2017, there were 28,843 housing discrimination complaints lodged against landlords in the United States. So this goes to show that these laws exist because we know it's a problem and because we want to protect people, right? Just because the law exists, we can't assume that all of the landlords are going to be following these laws all the time. And that's why I think it's important to talk about.
So what can you do if you experience housing discrimination? I mean, that's one of the big questions. A lot of people feel very vulnerable and they feel fearful that they'll lose their housing. But there's things that you can do. So self-advocacy is very important. You need to speak up for yourself and your needs. And there's many ways to do that. And, you know, us as either center staff that are helping youth or just people in general that are needing housing, we need to make sure that they have that type of self-advocacy. And you can bring someone with you to help, like a friend, teacher, parent, or IL staff when you go to, you know, fill out applications, go to places that if you're feeling like you've had housing discrimination, you are going to have to file a complaint. You know, that's one of the things that you're going to have to do. And bringing somebody, especially somebody who knows a little bit about discrimination themselves, is somebody you want with you, or, you know, just anybody who can be there as a peer is somebody that is good to have in the room with you. You need somebody with you. One of the best things you can do is try professional mediation. I'm a certified mediator. You can file an official complaint through your state or local government. Like we have a human rights commission here. There's the Labor Commission, Equal Opportunity Department, Fair Housing Center. Professional mediation, the whole role of mediation is making sure that you feel whole again. And that in mediation, what I was taught is everybody ends up compromising and not getting exactly what they want, but everybody leaves pretty much happy. So the whole thing is making sure that you feel whole. That's the role of the mediator. So you can search on the internet, do a Google search for housing discrimination and then your city name, and you'll find tons of results. And that's one of the best ways to find, you know, specifics for your specific area, your city, whatever you're looking for. If you think you've been discriminated against, you want to know more, you need to talk to somebody, you want to find a mediator, you want to find somebody just to talk to, do that. Do a search first.
Yeah, and the reason that I suggested that is because, as you can see on the previous slide, all of these organizations have different names and different groups that are responsible for investigating housing discrimination claims. So it's hard to be able to direct you towards one specific organization. So instead, I think the easiest thing to do is just Google search your city housing discrimination and see what shows up and who the authority is in your area.
And, you know, litigation happens. Even if you first go through mediation, if you file a complaint through like the Human Rights Commission, it can go to court, or you can just take the route and find a lawyer and take them to court. It happens. So it's an option. It's a long and expensive process. Most people go with mediation. Mediation is a lot cheaper.
Mediation's usually free.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I don't charge for mediation. But even like the Human Rights Commission here, a complaint through them can still take a year or more. So, you know, it depends on how you want to go. And, you know, if you're searching for immediate vindication, it's not going to happen right away with any of these processes, except, you know, mediation can be a very good way to do that.
So there are certain times when a landlord is allowed to discriminate. They're not allowed to discriminate against anyone based on their membership in those protected classes, but they can discriminate against someone who has poor credit history. If you have a lot of credit card debt or money that you owe, payments that you haven't made or you've been late on in the past, and they can see that in your credit report, then a landlord can refuse to rent to you because their primary concern is getting that money every month. And if they have reason to believe that you're not going to get it to them, they can just decide from the get-go they don't want to rent to you. And the same thing goes for a criminal record. Unfortunately, a lot of the time, especially if you live in an apartment complex, it can be hard to find a place if you have a criminal record, especially a felony on your record. And the reason that's given a lot of the time is because they want to ensure the safety of the other residents. But I think that's, if you've already paid your debt, I feel like you should be able to get past that. But that's my personal opinion. If you have any negative references, like if they call your previous landlords and they say, oh, they never paid rent on time, they were the worst tenant I've ever had, right? Then they can say, oh, I don't know that I want to rent to this person. And they can reference, go and say that this reference is why that they're deciding not to rent to you. The same thing goes for if you've paid rent late in the past or if you have a pet, right? And remember, last week we talked about the difference between pets and service animals, but a landlord can refuse a tenant if they have a pet that is not a service animal, has not been recommended by a therapist. That is a reason a landlord can refuse a tenant. So what questions do you have? I know we've been asking questions a lot throughout the presentation, but I think this is both accommodation last week and this week is when we get a lot of specific scenarios of things that have happened to people and things that they were like, what could I have done to fix this problem? Or what can I do to fix this problem if you're currently experiencing that? So we've got, I think, about 5 minutes if anyone would like to use the chat box or turn on your microphone so that you can ask a question.
I just have a quick general question. This is a lot of good information to digest over the last few weeks. If we have a question or if I have a question and, you know, say it's past this, I mean, who could I direct my email to, you know, after digesting some of this?
That's a great question, Stevie. I know I would be willing to answer any questions that anyone has. I don't know if my email has been listed everywhere, but I can make sure that somewhere in next week's presentation, I have that listed.
Okay, because sometimes you'll think of a question later, and I just wanted to make sure there was a way to direct it appropriately.
Yeah, absolutely, Stevie. Mine too. Anybody can ask me anything.
Okay, thank you.
And just as a note for everybody, so you'll have this information. We're also, so when you registered, I asked for your physical address. We're going to be mailing lots of material as well for quick fact sheets and different tips and things like that, specifically for the Fair Housing Act. So you'll have some other stuff, other information to digest as well. But you'll get some more information beyond just this. So that might help with some of those questions. But they've been so thorough here, I'm not sure.
So, Sierra, the address we provided, because I provided my business address, so it'll be coming to that address, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
If for some reason you all would like it to go to a different address, just please email me that. My email.
No, it's good. I just wanted to just clarify that. No, it's fine.
Okay.
Anything else? Our last few minutes.
Tell them what's coming up next week, Dylan.
Next week, I've been looking forward to this topic since we started, because I think it's one of the most important is affordable housing, and specifically the lack of it and how hard it is to find. So we're going to talk about, I hate talking about problems and just focusing on what the problem is, but I think we have to talk about the problem to know what it is so that we can find a solution. So we're going to spend a little bit talking about average rents across the country, how many hours a week people have to work to afford that rent. And then hopefully we'll be able to spend some time talking in small groups and strategizing on how, looking at other countries across the world, how they approach fair housing, affordable housing, making sure that there is enough housing that low-income people can afford, and thinking of suggestions for your own community and how you can address that topic and make sure that there is more affordable housing available to people who need it.
I just have one suggestion. I just wish that this series didn't end, because this is so much good information that, I mean, like I said, there could be other questions. I mean, is there projected that there might be another series in the future that might cover other topics? Because I don't know what the topics would be, so don't ask me right now, because I'm just trying to soak all this information in.
That's up to Sierra.
Well, I would love to say it's up to, so this was an idea that was prompted by our youth advocacy committee. One of the things that we noticed when we pulled young people together to talk about advocacy is that they felt that they needed more information and more education on the laws that they were trying to advocate about. So that's where these series every year kind of come from. So what I would encourage you to do is jump on the advocacy committee meetings and continue to ask those questions. We have a time where if a situation comes up individually or somebody you're working with, all of us can kind of brainstorm around that issue and help work through that process. If we don't have that information, a lot of times we know the people to reference and refer you to. So that would be my suggestion, if there's future ideas or questions, to jump on those committee meetings. And they are on the just for anybody that is interested, they are on the fourth Wednesdays of every month from 2 to 3 o'clock Eastern time. So okay, Wherever that falls in everybody else's time zone.
Sierra, if it's not too much, can you send me that information in an email? And is there a link that we have to click to, just like with this one?
No, that's a great question. Nope. So that is actually just a phone call. So it's just a conference call line. No tech stuff. We try to keep that one low key. But it is on our website. The date is wrong on our website, but the information for how to access the call is on there. So I'll be updating that soon as well. All these things go on there.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. So the fourth Wednesday, mm-hmm. at what time?
2 o'clock Eastern time.
2 o'clock Eastern time. Okay. I will keep that in mind, definitely.
Yeah, great.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think we've gotten to the top of our hour. This was a lot of information, really great information. So I thank both of you for, first of all, I'm a little history nerd, so thanks for throwing in some history in there for me. I think it's really great to know where we've come from. To how we got here. So I'm excited about raising the rent tomorrow, or not tomorrow, next week. And that will be the
30th.
Yeah. So next week will be our last one. That's going to be on May 30th, again at 3 o'clock Eastern time. So wherever that falls in your time zone. And you will get that email with this recording, and the information hopefully will be the right one for the fifth one. But come for that to be ready to talk, because Dylan mentioned we're actually not going to be presenting the whole entire time. By we, I mean them. they're not going to be presenting the whole time. We are wanting to brainstorm and have people join in smaller conversations. So we ask that you get ready to do that. But I think that's it. Thank you all. And Dylan and Don, thank you for sharing your expertise.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Talk to everybody next week.
All right. Bye.